else.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Morning, happy Tuesday to you. Welcome into the program. Hope your day is starting off well. Mine is so far so good. I didn't spill coffee all over myself, so that's a good start, which I never would have considered until like last week or the week before when I did it. Now it's a constant fear every single time. It's a problem when your cup is bigger than the Keurig machine. Anyway, there's a lot that we can discuss this morning. You heard quite a bit of news there from Phil Devitt of things that we can discuss. We had a mistrial in the Karen Reed case. We have the story of Freestone's closing. We have the story of the Boston Celtics being up for sale, or at least a portion of the team. So it's a little confusing, at least it certainly was yesterday when the news broke, as to who is selling what. Now, when the organization came together to purchase the Boston Celtics in 2002, first of all, that was a bit of a surprise because we didn't know that then-owner Paul Gaston had any interest in selling the team. People had lamented for years that he should. They were not happy with the way that he handled the team. They were perennial losers under his hand. They had two great young talents in Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker, but they weren't really surrounding them with the best pieces. This new ownership group comes in 2002. They really start putting their fingerprints on the team in the 2003 season. Of course, hiring Danny Ainge, putting together a team that eventually won the championship in 2008, and then building toward what we have now. And I also think it's pretty interesting how they're just, you know, handing out max deals or you know, handing out big money deals to all the players, and then Wick saying, and I'm out. But he's not out. He's not out for a number of years still. It's going to take a number of years for a transition to happen. So he will be the NBA governor for the Celtics for a few more years. So there was some confusion. Some outlets were reporting that it was the entire ownership group, which would have been, you know, Wick Grousbeck, his father, H. Irving Grousbeck, Steve Pagliuca, and Bob Epstein. But the way, you know, some of the clarifications that have come out, Adam Hibbelsbach of the Boston Globe was saying it's just Wick. It's not even Irving Grousbeck, who, as far as I know, still has a piece of the team. I mean, he's 89 years old, so I don't know how much time he spends. You know, he's probably fully retired at this point, and I don't know how much involvement he has. And the stories that have come out since, I saw a quote this morning from Steve Pagliuca in the WCVB story. He says, I am great. Well, maybe Irv Grousbeck is out, because he says, I am grateful and thankful for the 21-year partnership I have enjoyed with Wick and Irv Grousbeck, the Epstein family, and all the incredible Celtics investment partners. This is from Pagliuca, Steve Pagliuca. He says, being a co-investor and managing partner of the Celtics has been a great honor and a labor of love. I hope to be a part of the Celtics moving forward and will be a proud participant in the bidding process that has been announced today. So I would assume that to mean that Steve Pagliuca is looking to buy out Wick Rausbeck's interest. And this makes sense. This is probably what the plan is anyway. They'll probably entertain offers, but it sounds like the plan is probably for Pags to buy the team and become the, I guess, the sole majority owner. What's interesting about this, too, is that they're only selling a majority stake, which means that they still could have an ownership piece. So they could sell the majority stake but buy in at a minority share and still be involved. Wick can still sit courtside. He just wouldn't be involved in the business decisions. And honestly, so I don't pretend to know all the inner workings, but at least in my time covering the team, which admittedly I stopped doing over a decade ago, but I spent a decade covering the team. I was there for the first, 9 years of this ownership group's tenure. And from my understanding, it was, although Wick was kind of the public face of the ownership as the governor of the team, that's what they call, the voting owners, the people who are kind of representative of the franchise at the NBA level. That's the board of governors is who makes all these decisions. That's what they call the ownership group, the ownership committee. Is the board of governors. So as the governor, he was kind of the person who was more the face of the ownership, but Steve Pagliuca was always part of it and always right there. And, it was seen as a partnership between those two and to a lesser degree, Bob Epstein and Irv Grosbeck. But I think all of the decisions that were made, Pags had a hand in. So I don't think you're going to not see, if he's the person who's going to take over, I don't think anything's going to change. Now, the thing is when you've got one of the most valued and storied franchises in sports on the market, offers are going to come in out of the woodwork. And I don't know how much money Steve Pagliuca has. If I remember correctly, I know he was a venture capitalist. I think he worked for Bain. I'm sure he has, if he doesn't have the money himself, he has the ability to raise the money to buy out Wick Rausbeck. If the whole franchise was to be for sale, we're talking about $4-5 billion. Would be the expected price. By the way, too, I just want to correct something that they said on America in the Morning. They said you could own a piece of the parquet floor. Yeah, you'll own the parquet floor if you buy the Celtics. You will own the parquet floor. I'm pretty sure the Celtics own the parquet floor. Don't quote me on that. But they don't own the floor that it actually gets installed on because they don't own the building. The Celtics do not own TD Garden. They don't even own a piece of TD Garden. They rent TD Garden from Jeremy Jacobs, from Delaware North, from the Boston Bruins. The Jacobs family owns TD Garden. The Celtics have always just been tenants. They get the ticket income from the games. They get the merchandise sales from the games. And again, they've got to take their rent out of it. They do not get the concession money. That all goes to Delaware North. I don't know if that's changed since I covered the team. Maybe they've worked out a percentage or something. But back in the days that I was there, it was all the concession money went to Delaware North. And so as renters, to still be valued at $5 billion, that's a price that doesn't include the arena. Normally, when you have these high-value franchise prices, it's because they own an arena. They own a stadium. They own a building that will be utilized for other things. So you'll get other revenue that comes in aside from just the sports team that resides there. If the Patriots were to go up for sale, somebody's buying that. They're also getting Gillette Stadium. They're also getting Patriot Place. You know, they're getting other revenues that drive up the value of the franchise. But for the Celtics to be worth $4 to $5 billion without having their own building is pretty phenomenal. And not bad, by the way, for an investment of $360 million, which I think was a record at the time in 2003, 2002. I think it was a record at that time. So not a bad return if the whole franchise was to be sold. Someone who comes in to buy it might be able to come up with a plan to build an arena. The problem is there's not a lot of space in Boston to build an arena. There had been talk for years of the Celtics building an arena in the suburbs. There was also talk, I believe Frank McCourt was going to buy in or wanted to buy the team at one point and looked into to building an arena. There's talk, too, that they could partner with Wynn and build an arena near Encore. So it's possible that you could have a Celtics building somewhere down the line. And I know that this ownership group talked about it because I remember discussing it with Wick Grousbeck before a game one day. And his statement to me was something along the lines of, you know, very, very happy with the relationship that we have with the Jacobs family. TD Garden already becoming iconic. This is when they were referring to it as the jungle. They would play Welcome to the Jungle before the games, and they referred to it as the jungle. I think they kind of got away from that because it had some negative connotations as well. But he talked about it would be attractive to have your own building, but that they weren't in any rush to do anything. So it sounds to me like what's really going to happen is Steve Pagliuca is going to buy out Wick Grousbeck and become the sole majority owner, or, you know, Bob Epstein sticks around, whatever. But I don't even think Bob's stake is majority. I think he's the head of the minority group. It's all these complicated things. The bottom line is, I don't think you're not going to see, you know, Elon Musk swoop in and buy the Celtics. God, I hope not. Could you imagine? He'd ruin them like he ruined Twitter. But the other part of this is, as this is going on, Jason Tatum signs the largest contract in NBA history, $314 million. Beating out his teammates' previous record for the NBA's biggest contract in Jaylen Brown. So, and then, of course, they also signed Derek White to a contract extension. Drew Holiday was signed to an extension. They've still got Kristaps Porzingis under contract. So this is a team that's going to compete for a while. But really, the important thing is what happens to the franchise itself. Because people look at the Celtics history and the Celtics tradition, they might not realize that the Celtics have changed hands a number of times during that tradition. So if it's done right, you don't even know. 508-996-0500. I put a story up yesterday, just something that I thought people would find of interest. I realize not everybody drives down Route 18 all the time. So in case you hadn't, I put up a story and some photos of the new pedestrian bridge. They installed the arches on the pedestrian bridge in recent days. So it's starting to resemble what it will look like with the finished product. And so I just thought it was interesting. I was actually driving on 195 and I just kind of looked out and saw the archways kind of poking through the horizon a little bit. And I said, oh, they must have those up. And so I, you know, got off the highway, went down Route 18, stopped and took some photos. And I said, if I thought it was interesting, somebody else will. Somebody else has been driving down to 195 saying, what's that? Not everybody knows that there's a new pedestrian bridge going in there. Not everybody knows what it's going to look like. So I put up this story and some photos. And of course, the negativity starts in. The comments on social media from the people who think it's a waste of money to build a pedestrian bridge for a train that's never coming. The train is coming. It's coming a little bit later than we thought, but it's coming. It will be here by next year at this time. You will be able to ride the train from New Bedford to Boston. As such, they needed a pedestrian bridge to get people from one side of Route 18 to the other, to the train station. And the original plan was for, from the way Mayor Mitchell described it to me when he was on the radio with me talking about it, it was originally a much more, for lack of a term, you know, brutal. It was more functional than it was form. It was more, this is just going to get people from one side to the other, and that's it. And Mayor Mitchell said, you know, it didn't look like something that was going to be representative of New Bedford. He wanted something that was going to be an iconic structure, something that when people are driving into the city and they see this, or riding in if they're on the train, and they see this, this should be something that is eye-catching and can become a symbol. And so it went from being an $8 or $9 million bridge to a $21 million bridge. And as I pointed out in the article and in the Facebook caption, it's paid entirely by the MBTA. Well, of course, the know-it-alls in the comments have to point out that that's still taxpayer money, as if we didn't know that the taxpayers fund the MBTA. In addition to, you know, the fares they collect, but it's also taxpayer funded. And the point here is that your tax dollars that you pay to the state have been funding these projects everywhere else but here for years. They've been building nice bridges in Metro West and on the North Shore for those communities to have rail service, and you were paying for it. Now it's time for everybody else to chip in and pay for it here in our neck of the woods. I saw a comment this morning where, you know, it says there it's a $21 million project, and somebody commented, yeah, $20 million too much. Okay, well, I didn't realize that you were either A, an architect, or B, a structural engineer, that you knew exactly how much a bridge should cost. When they were saying previously that a very basic footbridge was going to be $8 million. Yes, this one is almost three times that. But that's because Mayor Mitchell fought and advocated for it on your behalf so that you didn't have an ugly bridge that just gets people from point A to point B. Anyway, we can talk more about that. And you can see those photos at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. There's no timeline yet on when that's expected to be completed. Perhaps the next time Mayor Mitchell is in with Chris, I'm not sure if it's going to be tomorrow just because it's a holiday week, but maybe the next time the mayor's in, we can get an update if he has an idea of when it's going to be completed. But they still haven't finished the elevator on the other side, on the Whale's Tooth side. And it looked like they're still, you know, still going to bring in the trusses. And apparently there's some lighting on this bridge as well. 508-996-0500. I'm going to take my first break of the morning, and we will be right back. She's taking a swipe. And welcome back. And we'll be taking more of your phone calls, or start with your phone calls coming up in just a little bit at 508-996-0500. App chat and open line voicemails, also both open on the WBSM app. Both really easy ways to get in touch with us, even if you can't sit around and hang on the phone and wait, or if you're in a place where you can't talk, you can always send those app chat messages or open line voicemails. But right now it is time to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
Mixed reaction to Donald Trump's partial Supreme Court win. Your 4th of July cookout will cost more this year. And you could soon be hearing a lot more Tom Petty.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Former President Trump's partial victory in the Supreme Court over immunity is sparking intense reaction from both parties. The justices ruled 6-3 Trump has limited immunity in the federal election interference case for acts he took while in office. President Biden says it sets a, quote, dangerous precedent.
The American people must decide. They want to entrust the president once again, the presidency, to Donald Trump. Now knowing he'll be even more emboldened to do whatever he pleases whenever he wants to do it.
Possible Trump VP pick Ohio Senator J.D. Vance called it a massive win. And Trump advisor Alina Habba says the ruling means Trump's election interference case has hit a roadblock.
I don't see how this case could go forward before the election.
A further delay in the case means Trump will be free to campaign and not be holed up in a courtroom. However, the ruling doesn't impact Trump's upcoming sentencing in his New York hush money case on July 11th. The judge in that case could sentence Trump to prison or home confinement. American victims of Hamas's October 7th attacks are suing Iran, Syria, and North Korea over their support of the terrorist group. The Anti-Defamation League filed a lawsuit in Washington, D.C. that could mean federal funding for victims of terrorism. The organization's CEO said the lawsuit is about holding the nations accountable for providing material support to Hamas. It claims that Hamas was able to carry out the attacks because of their support. California has a new law requiring bars and clubs to offer drug testing to protect customers from spiked drinks. It makes free or reasonably priced testing kits mandatory. The tests will be in the form of test strips, stickers, straws, or other devices. The price of a 4th of July cookout is higher this year. A report from the American Farm Bureau Federation puts the average cost of feeding 10 people at $71.22. That's about $3.50 more than last year. The U.S. Marine Corps is rebuilding a runway on the site of a nightmare World War II battle. Mark Mayfield with the story.
An aircraft landed on the rebuilt runway on a Japanese airfield on the Pacific island of Peleliu. One of the Marines' bloodiest battles of the war is now potentially a U.S. basing option for China strategy. A Marine Corps press release called it a significant and triumphant return to this iconic World War II site. Engineers worked to rebuild the runway for months by clearing brush and trees and making sure that no unexploded ordnance was still there from the World War II battle. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And Tom Petty's estate is signing a deal to distribute the late singer's music catalog. Petty recorded more than 13 studio albums with the Heartbreakers and 3 solo albums over his 40-year career. The Petty estate said in a statement that the deal with Warner Chappell Music will open the door to new licensing opportunities.
WBSM Sports.
The Red Sox are seeking their second win in a row. Boston begins a 3-game set against the Miami Marlins tonight in Florida. First pitch at 6:40. And the Celtics are up for sale. The majority owner has put the team on the market weeks after the NBA championship win.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast. Brought to you by C Street.
Expect wall-to-wall sunshine for today, right from the start. Temperatures are going to respond to that sunshine, too. Look for a high near 83. Overnight tonight, mostly clear. Your low near 50. 65. And as we look to Wednesday, it's going to be beautiful. Mostly sunny skies, your South Coast high near 84. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Kelly Bates on New Bedford's News Talk Station, 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM News Update brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
Welcome back in, 508-996-0500, app chat and open line voicemail on the WBSM app. And we can get into what happened in the Karen Reed trial, but the question now becomes what happens next? And the next hearing, the next part of this process will happen on July 22nd, when the parties will all come together and discuss what the plan is to go forward. But the DA's office said that they do plan to retry the case. So that means that I'm going to assume they've already spoken to the family, the O'Keefe family, and that's what they want to see happen. We will see if the charges change, because they don't have to retry on the same charges. They could go for lesser charges. And that might be what they do here. Because a lot of folks said, you know, Chris Markey said many times here with Chris McCarthy that she was overcharged. And second degree murder was too much of a reach for what it appears had happened. And so I think you'll probably see lesser charges this time around. Manslaughter. And what's interesting is there was a lot of talk on social media. And of course, social media doesn't mean anything because nobody really knew anything. They were just speculating. But there was a lot of talk on social media that there was one person holding out. But the jury notes back to the judge made it sound like, you know, there were multiple people who saw this from a different perspective. Now, multiple could just mean two, but there was more than one. I mean, now it's going to be really hard to find a jury that doesn't already have their mind made up, you know, about this case. So we'll see what happens going forward, but they have a year to retry her. So it's not like you're going to have to wait forever for it to happen. But it'll probably take a little time because they're probably going to reorganize and figure out what went wrong on both sides, because, you know, both sides didn't do their job. You can't say either side did their job 100% effectively if you had a mistrial, if you had a jury that couldn't come to a decision. So each side will look at what they could do a little bit better next time around and figure out a better way to proceed with this case. And of course, you heard Phil also mention earlier that State Trooper Michael Proctor has been suspended and he is going to be reassigned. He's under investigation. He'll no longer be a detective with the DA's office. He's not currently on any cases. So how will that impact a second trial? And then the question came up, I saw a few people asking this question on social media. Wouldn't a retrial mean double jeopardy, that she's being tried again for the same crime? And no, for a couple of reasons. One, she probably won't be tried for the same crime or the same charges. It'll be lesser charges. And there were lesser charges as part of this original trial. But it's not double jeopardy because there was no verdict in
the first trial. Basically, a mistrial means this trial never happened. It doesn't mean she's no longer charged. Basically, what it means is you are charged and you haven't been brought to trial yet. Forget the trial ever happened. You're now awaiting trial. That's the way that a mistrial works. And then sometimes when a mistrial happens, the prosecution will choose to drop the charges, not pursue anything further. But that's why the DA's office said that they do plan to pursue a retrial. So hopefully that clears it up if anybody's confused. Basically, double jeopardy only counts if there's a verdict, and there was no verdict in this case. You can't try somebody for the same crime for which they've already been convicted or acquitted, and she was neither. And an interesting side story that came out of this yesterday, too, there was a person who ran from the courthouse who was there for a probation violation. He just happened to be at the Dedham courthouse for a hearing on his probation violation, and he escaped the courthouse and ran away, and the police tracked him down. And, of course, you've got all the media outside as this happens. Camera crews just following. They have no idea what's going on. They see everybody running after this guy, and they just follow, grab the camera, and keep running. But they were able to get the guy and bring him back into the courthouse. I don't know what he thought he was going to get away with. Did he really think he was going to escape? But it just added kind of like these, you know, the circus environment of what was going on there. 508-996-0500, app chat, open line voicemail on the WBSM app. I'm going to take my next break, and we'll be back in a few moments. Of course, that is Foreigner, and you will have the chance to see Styx and Foreigner as part of the Renegades and Jukebox Heroes tour coming to the Xfinity Center in Mansfield. It's happening on, I believe it's August 2nd, and we have your chance to win tickets right now at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. So it's brought to you, of course, by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. They are the proud sponsors of Tim's Tickets all summer long, because Stevie's loves a good party too. They love a good show. They love a good concert. And they actually have some tickets to some of these shows too that they're giving away with raffles and different special events over there. So you definitely want to follow along with them on Instagram and Facebook to keep up with all of that. But this show is going to be huge. Of course, you know all the hits from Styx. You know all the hits from Foreigner. You've got John Waite opening up. Both his solo hits, stuff he did with the Babies, stuff that he did with Bad English. So it's just going to be a mega show. And you could be there for free. Tickets are still available at LiveNation.com and Ticketmaster.com. But if you head on over to WBSM.com or the WBSM app right now, you can enter to win tickets. We're giving them away all week long. And these are virtual tickets, so you don't have to come down and pick them up. If you're on vacation, you don't have to worry about coming in. You just enter to win, and if you're the winner, if we select your name, Casey sends you an email, you sign something virtually, send that back to her, and she sends you the tickets to your Live Nation or Ticketmaster account. And then you just show them those on your app when you get there, and you're in. You can also transfer them to other people if you don't want to go, if you're trying to win them for somebody else, or maybe you're bringing somebody with you and you want to give them their ticket ahead of time, you can just do that easily through the app. It's the future. It's amazing. So again, it's all brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Enter now at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. And I will tell you, I've been mentioning how we have every week planned out now through October. We've got tickets to give away all through October, each and every week. Well, yesterday, we just got tickets to two more shows that we hadn't even planned. So you're going to get a chance to win tickets to even more than we already thought that you would. Love it. Love having so much to give away. And love that there's been so many happy winners. And of course, if you do win and you go to the show, first of all, you never know when you're going to see me there. But if you do go to the show, send us some photos. Use the app chat feature or the send audio video feature on the WBSM app and send some photos or just email them to me, Tim at WBSM.com. We want to see you having a good time. One place where you could always have a good time in New Bedford, but no longer, was Freestone City Grill. I first discovered Freestone's when I started working at the Standard Times. Because I worked at night, we would have dinner. And, you know, people would say, hey, we're ordering dinner from here. Do you want to order? And they had an envelope. They would just collect the cash from everybody in the envelope, and one person would go pick up everybody's order. And the first time they said, oh, we're getting Freestone's. Do you want Freestone's? I was like, you know, I've never been there. But what do they have? What do they have that's good? And I don't even remember who it was. But somebody said to me, well, if it's your first Freestone's experience, get Syrian nachos. And so I did. And I was blown away. So we got a lot of food from there. I went there quite a bit when I worked over there. Haven't been too much lately. Maybe it's my fault that they're closing because I stopped going. But they are closed permanently. The owners put a Facebook post up yesterday. To all of our valued guests, it is with a heavy heart that we announce that we are closing down Freestone City Grill effective immediately. We appreciate each and every one of you that have visited and continued to do so over the past few years. To our staff, we apologize that we weren't able to keep things going. You've all worked really hard, and we appreciate all that you've done. Thank you all. As of right now, we're still working to figure a few things out. Keep an eye out for announcements regarding gift cards. Thank you for your understanding and patronage throughout the years. So, of course, you know that Freestone's closed down a few years ago. They kind of revamped things a little bit, reopened, but they just couldn't keep it going. So now an iconic downtown New Bedford restaurant is no more. What's going to happen? Will somebody come in and purchase that? Will somebody come in and keep Freestone's going as is or start a new venture there? I mean, they cited one of the reasons is parking. Parking is an issue. But it's not that much of an issue. If you park at the Elm Street garage, you only got to walk a block. Granted, you're walking on cobblestone streets, but there's a sidewalk. I think more needs to be done to promote parking in the garage. And I know Mayor Mitchell, this is something that frustrates him because people don't utilize the garage, but maybe just make the garages free all the time. You can pay for a meter or you can park for free in the garage for, you know, a year to get people used to it. Can you financially withstand losing the revenue for a year? I don't know, just an idea. 508-996-0500. I've got to take my final break of this hour. We'll be back in a few moments. Don't forget, when you hear Laura Branigan's Gloria, that's when you got to get up out of your seat and start doing jumping jacks. That's your morning calisthenics music right there. Just like I used to do in school. We had very few records in my kindergarten classroom, but that was one of them. And that was so that we could all do jumping jacks to that song. We had that, and then we had, there was a collection of songs. Like, each letter had its own song. And I remember the S song, because S was a supersonic freak in the sky. I got to see if I can find that. I did find the Zoom, My Name is Zoom, and I Live on the Moon